Hi, and welcome to Real Nurse Stories. Today on the show, I'm interviewing Joanne. Joanne is a registered nurse working in emergency in a regional hospital in Australia. Hi, Joanne, and welcome to the show today.
Hi, Eva. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, Joanne. It's nice to have you here, and I'm really looking forward to hearing all about your career story this morning. Well, if it's okay with you, we'll just jump right in, and I'll just ask you really to share with me what made you decide to become a nurse.
Well, me as a small child, I was always put in front of the television watching National Geographic documentaries, and for me, I just loved seeing how the human body worked and how it would overcome injuries, insults, to heal itself, and just understanding how the body worked. I wanted to know more. Henceforth, I thought nursing was the next step. My other big inspiration for wanting to be a nurse, I used to love the show China Beach, which was on television, which based on Vietnam nurse experience, played by the character Dana Delaney, playing Colleen McMurphy as the emergency army nurse. At the time, I was in army cadets, and it's a bit like Girl Guides or Boy Scouts, but with an army theme, not with more so as the skills of learning how to be a soldier rather than how to kill people. Very much leadership, navigation, radio, first aid. And so I got a bit more of an introduction through that, and I love that. Adding on to that, watching China Beach, I just went, this is where I want to be. I want to be an army nurse down the track, working somewhere. And that's started my journey.
So you had a very clear idea of what you wanted to do.
Definitely. Watching that China Beach show, I thought, who is this all based on? And I discovered Linda Devanta, I think you say her name, and her book, Home After Morning. And it still sits on my bookshelf. It's something that I go back to every so often. More so now, after working so many years in emergency, realising that resilience and that professional resilience that you get after working with so much trauma.
That's so true, actually. I have interviewed a couple of nurses who are working in similar backgrounds, and that always strikes me as very much it's the front-facing department in a hospital, and you never know what's going to come through the door, and that brings with it all kinds of challenges around resilience, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's one of those things that you absolutely love. You come to a point where you go, I just love that excitement of not knowing what's coming in. But at the same time you go, I only get to know what happens to this person in that 8 hours that I have them. You always wonder what happens after.
How old were you, Joanne, when you went into nursing?
Straight out of high school, so I was 17.
Okay.
I was very lucky. I was in the second cohort of university students that went through the university system. So I was very lucky in the sense that we did 3 weeks at uni, 2 weeks on a clinical placement. And I found, so confronting initially. I think I was asked to help perform last rites on someone that had passed away and prepare their body. And as a 17-year-old, nothing can prepare you for that. But it was just one of those things that you learnt along the way. From my initial graduating class of 300, or 300 that started the course, only 100 made it through to the end of the three years.
Yeah.
I think that it says something about compared to the hospital system, where you're ingrained and taught along the way, and you very quickly drop out if it's not your cup of tea. But nursing students going through the college system would only discover that once they reached the end of their 3 years and actually got into the nursing field as to whether they would stay in it or not.
That's so true. It's as you're talking, I've just written something for a blog post looking back on my career. And I, like you, went into nursing at 18. And I can remember actually the first time, I think I was a first warder, first year student, when I had to lay a dead body out. And I can remember thinking, I didn't realise this was what nursing was about, because it's really challenging as a young, you know, adult going into a profession like nursing. I think I had very different, I knew I wanted to be a nurse, but I don't think I totally knew what I was walking into. So,
I don't think anything can actually prepare you until you're actually there on the floor.
No, not at all. So tell me a little bit about, you did your nurse training. Where did you go after your nurse training?
After my nurse training, it was really, really ironic. The reason why our course had so many students initially is it just was after the 1980s nurses strike. So the government were putting out places and fully fee-funded places for lots of nurses. But at the point, there was not enough grad programs for nurses to go into at the result of after 3 years. So I remember applying to 40-odd different hospital grad programs across Australia. I remember going to WA for 24 hours for a job interview. And ironically, my first grad program that I got was in my hometown. So I thought, that's just hilarious. So I ended up getting my first job at Frankston Hospital, which is now part of Peninsula Health Network in Victoria. So I stayed there originally a few years, ended up doing that unspoken thing of falling in love with a junior doctor and getting married. And then that junior doctor was in the military, and I had travelled as part of that process, and we were posted 4 times in 4 years. So I moved to New South Wales, ACT, back to Victoria. And then from there, the marriage didn't work out, unfortunately. But then from there, it was a travelling experience of trying to find the best position I could be in. At that point, I had a child, and I was pretty much moving from job to job, looking for the best stability and security that I could give for myself and for my daughter.
That must have been quite difficult working as a nurse with a young. How old was your daughter then at that point?
When I initially left, she was 15 months old, and I had tried significantly to keep the marriage alive and going, but it just, regardless of marriage counselling and all the rest of it, it just didn't work out. So I tried to stay in my hometown, but as a single mother, I couldn't afford to work and live and afford rent. Unfortunately, with nursing, it is shift work. The dream job is the business hours, Monday to Friday thing, but it's very difficult to attain. And as a result of that, childcare is just not available to shift workers on a 24-hour rotating 7-day-a-week roster. Mm-hmm. So I've often just moved, and my first important thing that I've had to factor in is organising childcare and a child carer who's willing to do that. Initially, when I first left my husband, I was hiring the child carers at the local family child care centre, and they would come to my house privately, and I would work night shifts because that was the only way that I could work. But my expenses on a rental of a very modest unit, on top of living expenses and paying for a babysitter, I was behind every week, and I thought, this is just not sustainable. I'm going to have to move on and apply elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I was lucky at the time, one of the nurses who came to the workplace I was in said, oh look, we're desperate for nurses up at Puckapunyal Army Hospital, would you be interested in going up there? And I said, let's have a quick look. And I looked at house prices there, and rentals, and I ended up going, well, here's an opportunity to land on my feet and start again. So I worked there at the Army Hospital up there for a bit, and then ended up moving to the local hospital there. Worked there quite successfully, went up the ranks, ended up being given authority to set up a little satellite day chemo unit for the little community hospital I was in, and at the same time maintain my skills in that little country hospital, as I was working pretty much on nights because that was the only way that I could sustain myself. So I was in charge of a 30-bed hospital with a three-bay or four-bay urgent care centre. So it was a lot of the clinical decisions and assessment skills that I have now I can thank to that country experience, because it was literally a GP on call who was 20 minutes away if need be. And so then I gained the great opportunity of a recruitment company who emailed me and said, have we got an opportunity for you in another country regional hospital? You need to make contact with the nurse unit manager there. And lo and behold, they said the magic words to me. They said travel, relocation costs, and funded postgraduate qualifications. Gosh. And I just went, it landed on my lap because it was something I could not do staying where I was, in anywhere on the mainland. So henceforth, the third of a container or 23 cubic metres of my life after 47 years, and I moved holus bolus, fresh start yet again, to a new town with no family or friends. But that's quickly changed as I've set myself up in my little community hospital with some great people that I work with, great neighbours, and an amazing generosity amongst the town here. So that's where I'm at the moment.
So you must have had must still have actually an enormous strength of character to literally kind of uproot, move with a young child into, you know, an area that you had no connections as such. That must have been incredibly hard to do on a personal level.
Incredibly hard with no family, no friends. I was a bit frowned upon by the family for leaving my husband, and so did not get very much support from them whatsoever. It was very much my dream was to be able to go to work and work normal hours and have a family member look after my child while I worked. But I was pretty much, you chose a divorce, that's the path you have to take. So I didn't get the family support that I so needed at the time. So I became resilient. I toughened up, and, you know, I went through personal trauma with illness myself. But I got to the other end, and every time I just kept fighting because the more I did it, even after 13 years of marriage, I just went, I've got my freedom now. I've got the ability to be the master of my own destiny, and to this day I have not resented choosing the path that I chose, regardless of all the obstacles that were placed in front of me. It was better than being unhappy, and something changes you in when you become a mother. It's just like your priority is your child above and beyond anything else. And I just thought, I want my daughter to grow up in a supported, loving home environment, and I could give that to her regardless of how little I physically had financially. I mean, to put it into perspective to you, the year I left, the previous financial year, I was on a combined income of $300,000 a year. The year I left, I dropped down to $30,000, was on a single parent's pension. The only days I could work were three morning shifts a week, and also pay for childcare. I'd moved to a ratty house that, you know, the heater was an old fireplace. The windows, around the windows, were cracked and it was windblown. I remember walking with my toddler in the local park collecting firewood. You know, I did those things because I had to. When I tried to stay in the hometown where I was, because that was where my home is, you know, thanks to, again, my army cadet training, I would go foraging for food. There was a man down by the beach where I was who had a beach box, and he was allowed to sell fish that he caught. And so at the end of every day, whatever was left over, I became a regular to him, but I'd be getting what I'd consider fresh fish. You know, he'd just be literally giving it away. But you do what you need to do to survive.
What kept you going, Joanne, through all that? You know, what was the thing that was driving you forward?
My daughter, without a shadow of a doubt, just to see her face. You know, just to see her smiling at something so minimal. I mean, prime example, never in my world would I have thought of mindfulness as being sitting there watching a toddler poking a snail in the eye and watching, and the giggles of laughter that would come out of this, of my daughter, for seeing the snail duck back in its shell and then sneak back out again. I sat there for 40 minutes watching this. Yeah. Never in my career would I've gone 40 minutes. I didn't have time to sit for 40 minutes and do nothing. So without a doubt, my daughter's taught me to see the world again.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I wouldn't change that for anything. Everything I've been through, I wouldn't change it.
No. Being a mum can bring so many rewards, can't it? And you notice the little things in life, as you've just beautifully described there. It's a very, I want to say, magical experience, I think, being a mum and watching a child grow up. Yeah. So that really was your motivation for just persevering in very difficult circumstances, was your daughter and her future.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I remember once it was her birthday and I really didn't have anything, not even 2 cents to really rub together, but I had enough to buy her one chicken nugget and one potato cake from a fish and chip shop. Yeah. And she was just, this was just like over the moon for her. So, you know, I think there is a degree, because I have met other nurses who have been in similar situations, be it their relatives are overseas or in another state, or they just don't have family supports to help them. But a lot of them, I'll share with you the story of this one nurse who I worked with, who was an agency nurse, and she just kept going in and out all shift, and I just kept going, my God, she must smoke a lot, was my initial thought. But then I thought, you know, but then I thought, no, there's something else going on here. And I just pulled her up, because I was in charge that night, and I said, you know, is everything all right? You know, you just keep stepping out. And she just burst into tears. And I just sort of said, what's wrong? And I gave her the biggest hug. And I said, and she said, come with me. So I walked out with her. Luckily, it was quiet enough to be able to walk out.
Yeah.
Went out to the car park. And she had 3 kids tucked up under quilts in the back seat of the car and in the boot space of her car. So she had been doing this. Her 3 kids were under 5.
Yeah.
And she was doing this every night, working night shifts. The only way she could obtain childcare was only during business hours again, which didn't help with nursing. No. So she would fly under the radar and work agency shifts from hospital to hospital, popping her kids in the car. Mm. Now that's just one story, but how many more are there out there?
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it, with nursing? You know, nursing is I always find this really kind of almost difficult to acknowledge, the fact that, you know, nursing is a caring profession, but the hours that are required and the shifts that are required don't facilitate the able to care for either young children or older relatives who might be ill, and the lengths that nurses have to go to be able to work as a nurse, to earn a living, but also to have those caring responsibilities outside of the role is just such a challenge, and still a challenge today, really. It's
I have to admit, it's just like I am on LinkedIn and I have made connections through that, which are lifelong. But it's about having the willingness, especially from management and senior levels, to go, this is a real issue and something needs to be done. I live 2,000 odd kilometres away from Tracy Churchill, who's the nurse unit manager at Logan ED. She was only on your show the other week. And I mentioned to her about the difficulty of childcare. And I said, how good would it be to co-facilitate a childcare, a family daycare, 24-hour family daycare centre within the hospital? And she said, that's a really good idea, not only for staff so that they could work whatever shift, but also for patients who come into ED who go, you know, I can't be transferred to another hospital because I need someone to look after my kids. And so she said, with her can-do attitude that she says, this is a really great idea. I'm going to push it up the chain. The next day I got a message from someone in HR at South Metro Health who said, this is a fantastic idea and a game changer, and I'm going to let you know we are working on it. And
oh, I just went, that's great.
Oh, my God. I don't even work in that organisation and my idea is taken seriously. You know, it's just talking to child carers now, I talk to them and they say, you know, we've got the organisations that can do it. All we need is a room that has a bathroom and a sink and is on ground level for us to happily step in and do the whole childcare side of it. All we need is the space. But you can have childcare co-located with every hospital. I know as a nurse, if I was told, hey, can you do a double shift? And I could say, Butte, childcare's already there. I'll do it, not a problem.
And think of the cost savings in terms of, you know, just being able to offer that would say cut their agency use probably dramatically, because you can offer additional shifts and nurses with caring responsibilities don't have to juggle, as we've just talked about, because they would be supported to do that.
Exactly. And imagine that as a magnet status opportunity for a hospital to say, we can offer childcare. I mean, I'd travel halfway across the country to have a job like that.
And that's, you know, that exam, I love that example, because to me that's, you know, nurses have a lot of knowledge about healthcare. They know quite often what needs to change and why. And I think to have the ability to be able to go and find the right person in an organisation and have that discussion and enable that change to happen is such a powerful thing, really, in this in the context that we're talking about here, but also, you know, for other aspects of care provision. And I think that's just such a fabulous example, because I'm sure every nurse, including myself, you know, will know people who have struggled, who've done night duty, who've had to work, you know, agency shifts to earn a living. And we're not doing enough to support nurses who have childcare responsibilities, particularly, and predominantly female profession. And I know that male nurses also have caring responsibilities, but it's time that changed.
definitely. I'd like to see something happen across the board. I do have to admit, I've spoken to the director of nursing where I'm currently working, and he's actually said he's a go-getter. He's come from here, gone elsewhere, and then come back. And he's actually identified a hospital building, like a house opposite the hospital, and that's his plan for next year, is to actually open that as a childcare facility for staff and patients. So I'm going, yes, my ideas are registering.
That's great, Joanne. That's a really good example of how your own experiences, you know, kind of given you the impetus really to make a change for other nurses in those circumstances. That's really great.
I mean, for most of us who don't have a supportive family or a partner, you know, we're often just a pay pack or two away from homelessness. And I mean, that's another issue that is special to me, is the homelessness issue. I mean, where I'm living at the moment is awfully cold at the best of times, and I just think I would hate to be homeless here.
Yeah.
But I know whatever emergency department I've ever worked at, we have our vulnerable members of the community who often present as the frequent flyers. Mm. And there are lots of issues behind that, I understand. But often, and I think there'll be most nurses will put their hands up and say, I've given hospital sandwiches to a patient. I've given a blanket to a patient. Mm. And, you know, and if that blanket's gone walking in the morning, that's okay because we've done our little bit to help people.
Yeah.
I won't mention the hospital I was at, but we actually, again, working permanent nights, so you're sort of away from the management overview of everything. But we would set up an area, because not the whole hospital was opened, obviously, for emergency departments, just a little area, but there was a little waiting area where we would actually bed down homeless people there overnight because at least there was a safe spot to sleep. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, we'd ask security to gently wake them up. We'd feed them all the sandwiches we could because they were only going to be thrown out in the morning, but at least they had a safe, dry, warm place to sleep.
Yeah.
And I'd often talk to them and their stories, and I'd just go, that could be me.
Yeah.
That could be me, you know. There but for the grace of God go I.
Yeah.
So why not? You know, that's another thing. I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime, but I'd love to see safe spaces develop, you know, undercover car parks. At hospitals or just an area where we could actually do some in-reach outreach services using the current supports for homeless people and actually say, look, they presented to our department again overnight and call them up just to say, hey, just letting you know someone who's on your books came here last night searching for help, just so people don't get fall through the net,
you know. And that's the thing, isn't it? When you work in ED, you get to know the regulars, the faces that, you know, people come to ED because if they're homeless, they have nowhere else to go and seek treatment in most cases. And I think you get to know those, I don't like to say regulars, but that they're people who keep coming back, and as nurses in a caring profession, it's very hard not to kind of be able to put yourselves in their shoes and feel compassion for that person. That's what we do, it's why we become nurses.
Absolutely.
And yet, you know, there is so much unmet need there in terms of their health needs that you could do an awful lot and prevent an awful lot with just some of those simple measures.
Simple things, and just to be able to look at what they're running, Morton Medical Group down in Hobart, along with City Mission, they've opened a safe space there, which is now running 24/7. Mm. And they're always looking for volunteers and financial support to give people a blow-up lilo and a blanket and a hot shower and access to community workers who are there to, you know, help them, whether it be an addiction issue or a housing issue or, you know, just needing a social support to say, let's link you in with the community services. Mm. And especially with what's going on now with COVID and the amount of unemployment which we're soon going to see, it's going to have real ramifications on the community at large.
Yeah.
And you know, it's people are already struggling, and I'm afraid to say it's only going to get worse.
I've got I'm hoping to interview somebody who, she's a nurse entrepreneur who has set up, you might have heard of Sunny Street.
Oh, yes, that's another prime example.
Yeah. She's hopefully going to be able to interview her about her journey, and I'm interested to know kind of more about that and her journey into working with homeless people and addressing homelessness. So yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we, given the circumstances in Australia currently, there are going to be many, many more people who are going to be struggling financially.
Definitely.
And sadly, I think that will increase the number of homeless people. And it is an issue that needs to be addressed.
Definitely.
Very, I mean, much so.
Maybe if there was an impetus in spending on community to try and bolster the economy again. I do not pretend to be an economist or financial advisor or anything like that, but let's put money into grassroots where people need it, with housing, trying to get people employed, giving them a purpose for being, giving them the supports they need for any medical or mental health issues. You know, let's start the ball rolling at the grassroots, and let's build this country up to what it can potentially do. Let's make a difference.
Absolutely. Let's think about for a moment what for you has been the most difficult part of being a nurse.
The most difficult part, probably first day on the job of any new job. I've had 13 jobs since I've started nursing. And I'm still yet to have any long service leave because I keep tending to move. One day I'll get long service leave. I don't know when. But, the first day on a job, it's just like you're new. You can't remember everybody's faces. You've got new IT systems to learn. You've got new policies and procedures to learn. It's just that nervous energy that happens on the first shift, and that anxiety, and that initial bit of having people accept you as to what you can do, and rather than being seen as, oh, who's this newcomer coming in trying to change things. So that's probably the hardest bit.
Do you think, because as you're talking, and I know that you've moved around and had lots of different jobs, but do you think that's helped you in your career?
Oh, definitely. Like I have people say to me, oh, you're just so experienced, and I'm just going, I've just moved around a lot, and I've been open to opportunities. I think the beauty of nursing is that if you're in an area and you want to do it, you can actually say, I'm going to put my hand up.
Yeah,
I want to learn this area. And because there is such a nursing shortage, they'll do it. Yes, it's fantastic for anyone to get postgrad qualifications. But I'm telling you now, I only started my postgrad qualification journey back in 2017 when I came here, where I was given free postgrad education, you know, because it was just out of reach. But in all that time, you know, I've worked in emergency departments, I've worked in urgent care centres, I've worked public, private, defence establishments. I've even volunteered for motorsport medicine, where I've ended up being the medical center manager for international level MotoGP and World Superbikes. So, you know, I've done it all. I've been in a helicopter and taken trauma patients from Phillip Island racetrack up to the Alfred.
Yeah.
So just because I've said, hey, I'm willing to give this a go, you know.
Yeah.
But to do so safely, to know that scope of practice is there to protect me.
Yeah.
And so as long as I don't step over that or out of that, I know that I'm doing the right thing.
It's interesting because you mentioned about not having long service leave, and I have jumped around quite a lot in my career and done lots of different things. And I did my training in the UK and worked most of my career in the UK, and long service there isn't such a big thing as it is here in Australia. And it's really fascinating to me because I have had conversations with nurses who don't want to leave a job because of their long service. And it's almost like it works to keep people where they are, because long service is something that's, you know, seen as attractive to staff, and it, you know, has, I think, gives a degree of flexibility about how they can take the long service. But I often think in some ways that can hold people back because they don't have that breadth of experience because they haven't moved around and tried those different things. And that's exactly what I find interesting about the long service leave here. Just an observation.
No, it's a very good observation. I remember the wisest bit of knowledge I was given by one of my in charges when I first started my grade year, my first rotation, first grade year, the end of your little interview that you have, the nurse unit manager said to me, now, the most important thing you can do for you in your career is not stay in the one place for the entire duration.
Yeah.
Get up and move around and see that there are different ways of doing things.
Yeah.
And that's valuable. I would wholeheartedly say that. You know, to young grads, don't stay in the same hospital you're worked at, even if they offer it to you. Go and see the world, you know, so many opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you share with me, Joanne, a time that you found really challenging in your career as a nurse and what you learnt as a result of that challenge?
Well, I think I need to share with you a personal experience where I endured the illness experience, if you could say. It was a time of high stress in my life after separating, and I was still in the process of lawyers and high stress and new job, new location, toddler on my hands, childcare still being an issue. But look, in a space of 5 hours, I actually lost the ability to walk. It started with a bit of tingling in one side of my face and one arm, and I thought, oh, maybe it's just I'm exhausted, I'll lie down and have a snooze. And then I woke up and it's just like, far out, the tingling hasn't gone. And, you know, I thought I better take myself to hospital because I thought, oh my God, am I stroking out or what? And over the, again, I was in a country hospital at the time. While I was waiting for transport to come, my legs just would no longer hold my weight, carry me. Long story short, I ended up being transferred to the Austin in Heidelberg, and what they thought was MS flare, my first MS flare, and I lived that MS nightmare I was in hospital for a full month there as an inpatient, and my God, did that teach me so much. I was reliant on nurses for everything for initially that first week because I wasn't allowed up out of bed. I was having high dose methylpred, I was having MRI scans, and that was just really challenging. And also with the fact that I still at that point had a toddler, and ex-husband who basically said, no, I'm not coming to collect her elderly frail parent that couldn't drive up to Heidelberg to collect her. And I had the most amazing child carer who said, no worries, I'll look after your daughter until all this is done and dusted. So then I could just focus on me. But that was probably the most challenging thing of my career, just to experience it from the other side. And that made a big difference to the way I see what I do every day, in the sense that every day, everything you do as a nurse impacts people, regardless of how minor you might think it is. That smile, that chuckle, that look, that frown impacts a patient. So you just got to be so mindful of what you do. You know, I've always said, as long as I have the passion, I'll stay in nursing. But the minute I lose it, I'll leave.
Yeah.
So, but 28 years on, I'm still here.
That must have been for you though a terrifying experience, because that, you know, knowledge that you have as a nurse, you know, and I think we don't make very good patients because we're, you know, at the slightest thing and we've got this, you know, diagnosis sorted and we've convinced ourselves and, you know, we're not good to ourselves if we get sick at all. So that must have been for you as a nurse, and having that nursing knowledge must have been terrifying for you.
Frightening. I was just now going, I'm finally landing on my feet, and now I'm going to face the rest of my life as, at that point, on a disability pension in a wheelchair trying to raise a daughter, and how can I nurse and do what I love? But, you know, luckily a month of hospital, and me being the resilient son of a gun that I am, who would not take no for an answer, I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and pardon the pun, to get back up on my feet. You know, after a month of being in hospital, they said, all right, we want you to go into inpatient rehab. And I said, I can't do that. I've got to get home. I've got to look after my daughter. And so I remember it because it was a Thursday, and they said, right, we're going to come back on the Monday for the grand round, and we'll review you, and we'll see how you are there, and then we'll make a decision then. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to show you. So here I was, I'm a four-wheelie walker. I'd tied hand weights to my legs. I was doing weights, walking all around, as far as I could around the ward that I could, as often as I could. I did as much as I could, and I'd practice with my wheelie walker walking and letting go of the wheelie walk and just having that there for a bit of security. And then it came to Monday morning, and I had one of the patients who I was sharing a room with play Amy Winehouse's rehab song, you know, they say, you're going to go to rehab. But I said, no. And I played that as they do their round, and they came around and said, I want to show you this. And so I pushed the wheelie walker away from me, and I wobbled, but I remained on my feet walking. Yeah. So they said, all right, we'll organise for outpatient rehab and you can go home. And that for me was just like, yeah, can't hold me back.
No.
And so then the best bit was a friend came to collect me and took me back home. And first stop, I should say, was the childcare centre, because it was very difficult for my daughter to come and visit me in hospital because she wouldn't want to leave me, and it would be more distressing to her. So my carer at the time, Lara, God love you out there in Seymour, she actually... you know, looked after her whole bolus and said, it's best if she stay here. And once you're home, you know, then you can readjust, but it's tearing her from you is just too difficult for her at this age. Mm. So she, my first stop was to stop at the childcare centre, and she didn't expect I was coming, and I did, and I picked her up, and the squeal of mummy, lives with me to this day, and she dropped what she had, came running to me, gave me a big hug, and then she looked at my walking stick and then looked at me again and gave me a big hug. And yeah, that keeps me humble, well and truly.
It must have been the best feeling in the world.
Oh, the best. It was just like, that's what I was fighting for. You know, as a post note to the story, I lived the MS nightmare for 11 months. My neurologist at the time put me on a trial drug called Tecfidera at the time, and he managed to get me on a free trial because it was like $2,000 a month for the tablets, because I couldn't drive myself to a treatment center to have Tysabri infusions. I had vision difficulties as a result of all of this that was going on. But long story short, he got me in to see a MS specialist neurologist who looked at my multiple MRI scans and looked at my multiple lesions, did a really complete thorough examination. And he says to me, I don't think this is MS. Your lesions are not typical of MS, your disease process. I think this is acute disseminated encephalomyelitis. And I said, you're what? You mean I don't have MS? And the biggest grin came on my face, and I just went, I don't know what this ADEM is that you're telling me about, but I don't care. I've just won the lottery. You tell me I haven't got MS.
That's fabulous.
I still have lesions in my brain on MRI. They don't seem to be impacting me. in any way, shape or form. I do have vision difficulties with one eye still, but you know, nothing holds me back. I just keep going and doing what I love. And I think the key is to do what you love most intently. There's a philosophy called Ikigai, where you need a balance of four things in your life.
Yeah.
And if you can find that, you can find your reason for being. And I think with all of my travels, all my obstacles that I've overcome, I think I've finally found my Ikigai at 48 years of age.
I love that. I love that. But sometimes that's part of the journey, isn't it? It's like all the things that you know, you've gone through, all shape, they shape who you are. And I think to arrive at that point, that Ikigai point where, you know, you feel, you know, I'm here, I'm doing what I love. It has meaning and purpose.
It does.
Is all connected with the journey and who you are and who you've become. And I think I love that concept of Ikigai. I think I've read the book, and it's just such a powerful message in there about doing something that has purpose and meaning. And
definitely. I think I've come full circle now, because now I'm at a point in my career, you know, I'm not really after the career advancement anymore. I'm just enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm wanting to leave my legacy to nursing now through your podcast as one way of telling my story. But it's imparting my stories upon junior nurses who I work with, and with my peers and colleagues, and hearing their stories and making a difference every day in whatever way I can with not only my colleagues but my managers, and also, you know, my patients. Who are really important. If I can, I'll share with you one more story, taking me back many years. I was in an emergency role or in the resus area, and we had this gentleman who had a cardiac arrest, and we brought him back from the brink, and then the next step was they're going to put in an arterial line and central line. And I said to his wife, come on, well, just pop into the relatives' room, and as soon as we get this done, we'll bring you back in. It's just a bit gory type thing, you know, best you don't see it. Anyway, because that was just the done thing. That's just what we did. So, unfortunately, he proceeded to arrest again, and we tried to bring him back unsuccessfully. And then it was just like, oh, quick, his wife. So we got the wife back, and it lives with me to this day. This is like 20-odd years ago, but she goes, I never got a chance to hug him. So, and he just had the odd little blip of activity on the monitor, and she was looking at that. And I said, it's just, no, this is not right, you know. And I dropped the side of the bed. We'd made him a little bit more presentable, and we sat him up a little bit, and I turned off the monitor, and I let her jump into bed with him and give him a cuddle. But still, you know, she left him talking and then not.
Yes.
And I just, that lives with me to this day, that I should have done that differently. I had a chance to revisit that similarly earlier this year. Actually, it was the end of last year. And it was a gentleman that had arrested or collapsed on the ward. A MET call had been called. And we sort of have a reverse triage system that if they're on the ward, they actually come back to emergency department with where I'm at the moment. And anyway, this gentleman, it worked out that he'd had an inoperable AAA that ruptured. And his wife was coming in, and I just thought, right, let's, without thinking of the previous thing, but I thought, let's make this experience good. The wife came in, his sister came in, we got him onto a comfortable ward bed as quickly as possible, and he kept saying, I'm just so dry. And I said to him, and I looked at the doctor, and you know, doctor was happy with my taking over. I said, at this point you can drink whatever you like. And he looks at his wife and he goes, the black label. And so the sister goes, right, I'm off to get it. And so, you know, and I said, would you like to give your hubby a cuddle? So again, same thing, ward bed, he was in the bed, she was in the bed. We ended up expediting a ward transfer as quickly as possible. And they went up in the bed together up to the ward. As I handed over to the nursing staff, I saw the sister coming in with the with the Johnny Walker Black Label. And then I thought, I've got to give my respects as I leave. So I'd hand it over. I got back there and he said to me, you know, I'd love you to have a drink with me. And I said, oh, no, look, I appreciate that, but I can't. But yeah. I promise you, tonight I'll have a drink for you once I'm off shift.
Yeah.
And they were drinking whiskey out of polystyrene cups. And I said, ah, that's not good enough. So I went off to the kitchen and I said, whatever your best glassware is, can you help me out, help a dying man out and his family? So I ended up getting the glassware from the boardroom and I brought it back. And so they were finally drinking, you know. And so it made a positive experience that this is something that was a nice way for them to remember. You know, I ended up getting a thank you letter from the wife and said, you know, he didn't last long, but we were able to recall love songs of Elvis as he passed and, you know, really appreciate everything that you did and made all the difference.
And so
I'd learned from, it didn't matter about the clinical side of things. If the family wants to be in there in the middle of a traumatic situation, you give them a choice.
Yeah.
You give them a choice. They may choose not to, but everything you do, you don't want a family member to see, you know, Jesus Christ posed, arms off a recess trolley, in a mess. You don't want that. You don't want that to be someone's last image.
No.
So you make it as memorable as you can and make it as positive as you can for the whole family. And I think that's the key or the art and the science to nursing and what we do.
I was just going to say, you've taken the words out of my mouth. I was going to say that for me, what you've just described there sums up the essence of nursing. You know, that the hugely important, compassionate, you know, being in that space, understanding what that means for the family and the patient and going over and above to just make that experience something that is positive in a very difficult, you know, life-changing event, really. So, yeah, that's a lovely example. A lovely example.
Yeah.
I really like that. Thank you for sharing that. Well,
My pleasure, and hopefully it might inspire others to go, no, let's just, you know, it's not about the beeps and the buzzers and the monitors and the technology. It's about that human essence of touching someone and being there. I know it sounds cliched, but I use it often, but it is from first cry to last breath and everything in between, and that's what emergency nursing means to me.
Yeah, that's fabulous. That's such a powerful example of how it should be.
Definitely. And it's so rewarding, you know, like I've only just recently I recently left where I'm working to give a hand. I was given the opportunity to work a Monday to Friday business hour job, but it didn't end up being what I wanted because it was an emergency, and I actually had the guts after 3 months to go, no, this isn't tick in the boxes for me. I need to go back and do what it is that I love. I'm heading back to where I was, back to emergency. So, but with the whole new outlook on what I'm going to do, because I'm here now. I've like I've said, I've found my ikigai. I found my reason for being, and it is to be an emergency nurse and in a place where I'm surrounded by the most amazing team of people, supportive management, and amazing patients.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to be part of this community and community hospital that I'm in.
Yeah. What would you most like to be remembered for, Joanne, in your career as a nurse?
For me, I think the most rewarding part for me, or to be remembered by, is when I go down the street and someone says, oh, you fixed me, or you helped my mum, especially little kids. I recall going to the swimming pool where I was once, and there's a little kid coming up to me in the pool waving her hand at me, and I couldn't make the connection. And then she goes, you fixed my hand when I fell through the shower screen. And I went, just little things like that. It's nice to be remembered. But for nursing and leaving my impact on nursing is it's so rewarding for me to have a nurse contact me out of the blue and say, you know, you inspired me to go into emergency nursing. way back when, whatever year, and you know, they might be highfalutin and high up there and an academic, and it's just like, I'm glad to have been a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, I think for me, and also just to the junior nurses I'm working with now, they're just beautiful people with beautiful souls, and just want to give them as much opportunities as possible. And so if, I tend to find storytelling and putting them under my wing when they're learning, and taking care of them and nurturing them, to develop as people and professionals. I think that's what I'd like to leave as my as my legacy to nursing.
That's a great legacy to leave, I think. And there's so much in your story today that I just think, you know, people listening to this are going to take away so much from what you've shared, and there's a legacy in that story in itself, actually, Joanne. I think that's the beauty of, you know, doing this, and that's why I love talking to nurses about their careers and their stories, because there is so much in there. And I really want to thank you today for, you know, sharing openly and candidly your experience and talking about, you know, your personal situation in there, because I think that also helps other nurses who may be struggling, and listening to someone who's gone through that. And I, you know, to me, you are an incredibly resilient person given everything that's happened. And that's, you know, the work that I do with nurses, some of the other work I do is around coaching nurses around resilience. And, you know, I think just listening to your determination and what kept you going, and at times when it must have been or could have been really easy to say, oh, it's too hard, can't do this, you didn't, you carried on. And that, and you know, that that's again shaped you and who you are now in that Ikigaya space. So I really want to say thank you for your honesty in that. That's been really good to interview you.
No, thank you very much, Eva, for giving me an opportunity to share my story. So it's just means a lot to me. So thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.